All right. As always, let's be sure we are where we need to be spiritually speaking. 1 John 1:9, if you need to employ it now or however often, get yourself in fellowship. Keep yourself in fellowship. This is the way to learning truth, and it's the way to producing divine good. If you do good things and you're out of fellowship, you're not going to get a reward for them in the afterlife. It'll be burned up as human good, even though that's the right thing to do. Okay? Just giving you a tip, for how to maintain yourself in the angelic conflict. We have to tell ourselves that every day, all the way. If we're doing it, we're halfway doing it. Am I in fellowship? Yeah, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but am I in fellowship? That you maintain that. Things go better. You kind of build up a good type of thing going for you. And so that little things, God can be fully with you in little things, helping you through things. And of course, you have to have doctrine too, so you can fall back on, oh, this is how I'm supposed to think. This is the divine viewpoint on this one. Okay? All right. Let's proceed forward here. I was on point 16. The verse that I marked there in Thessalonians, I put an asterisk with it because it keys into what Paul's saying here. It's absolutely parallel in terms of the blameless aspect. The blameless aspect recognizes it from the divine viewpoint, though we use the term too. We may use other terminology, but this person was perfect. They did the whole, their job. Everything was just, I grade it A+. So God has this blameless aspect that a believers can attain to, and that is a result of being obedient, learning, staying with it through thick and thin, not letting untoward circumstances throw you off, not being led off by this and that. All right, we'll skip the Hebrews 8:7 because it's talking about something different. Innocent, kareios, is perhaps better translated harmless, as per Matthew 10:18. I said perhaps. Did I get that right? Never mind. It's used of Christ in Hebrews 7:26. Children of God refers to their status within the family of God via the salvation adjustment. All believers are children of God. Blameless and innocent or harmless, that's another story. Above reproach refers to a condition that satisfies the divine standard. God has a standard. This standard is not unreasonable. This standard takes into consideration that believers will fail. Even Zacharias failed twice in front of Gabriel. He sinned twice in the temple. Twice. He got under fear, and he was told to stop doing it. He doubted the promise of the angel, and he got a rebuke. And got his ability to speak shut down until John the Baptist was born. So for 9 months he was not self-imposed, divinely imposed. So the above reproach, amomos, probably those people are going to set up the thing for the kids. Either that or they're coming to get me. A convoy of black vehicles. Be nice to be with you. I'll see you soon. It refers to a condition that satisfies the divine standard. Ephesians. Sorry about that. Ephesians 1, verse 4. God anticipated us becoming believers before we ever existed. There was never a time when God didn't anticipate that you would become a believer and all the rest of us. So this plan operates because God is eternal before the foundation or the creation of the world, that we would be holy, set apart, and blameless before Him. Blameless before Him requires a phase two adjustment. There are believers that are definitely not blameless. They're not getting a good grades, in other words. They're flunking. They're failing. But blameless is something to be attained to. Colossians 1:22. Something to pray about, you know. I know we probably think, oh, I'm not that. I'm not. Well, obviously God is the final judge of all of us, and this deals with both adjustments. Yet He has now reconciled you in His fleshly body through death in order to present you before Him holy and blameless and beyond reproach. That's your final evaluation. Your final evaluation will come in the afterlife when you get your resurrection body. We all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ. We will all believers of the church age, be, and others, other dispensations, get their evaluation. But we will get our evaluation at the point of the rapture. We will be brought and we will be evaluated. We will be judged by fire. Our works will be demonstrated. And those of us who pass muster, even if it's just over the edge a little bit, fine. You'll get the crown. You'll get the ultimate award, the ultimate prize. No prize in the cosmos can even touch it. It doesn't even come close to it. And all the things people are grasping and trying to get out there, however meager, however big, and not ones that have got it, ones that are trying to get it, ones that have given up, will satisfied for, will be happy with whatever. These things pale. These things, first of all, they're temporal, right? They're something that's temporal. Someone has something, it's temporal. They do not take it with them. They do not enjoy it after they die. Not even the memory of it do they enjoy. People will not be sitting around in phase three talking about their accomplishments on the earth and how wonderful it was. Do you remember? Whether they're believers or unbelievers. Certainly unbelievers will not get any joy out of anything. They're suffering all the time. And if you're suffering real bad, if you've ever suffered real bad physically, the good things that happened in your past don't make much difference, do they? They don't console you. Oh, remember that trip we went on? It was so great. As you roll around on the floor. No, you don't do that. That's not natural. So, see, that's where God always, this is the thing. Excuse me. This is where God always gets, so to speak, the last laugh. I told you this was great. For somebody who bails and says, no, I got my eyes on the here and now, and I want to do this, and I'd rather live here, and I'd rather have this, blah, 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 ad nauseum. That's what they do. They sell out. They're still believers. They just sell out. So they're not going to get the prize because they didn't maintain their niche, their geographical will, and all the other factors that are involved and bear up under it. God gives you grace to bear up under difficulties. Difficulties are for this life. The one to come, no difficulties. You won't have the slightest inconvenience in phase three. You won't trip. You won't sneeze. And anything else you want to add to the list. Period. You'll have a body, resurrection body, that matches the one Jesus Christ has. Identical. Except you're not God. But you have that same physical, glorified entity, body. He'll be having something to say about this coming up here. And the last verse is the Revelation 14, referring to a group of individuals who will come on the scene. They've got to be alive today if the rapture is as close as I suspect that it is. And they're not saved yet. And they're all males. And not one of these males, this is the part, where are you going to find these? You want to find 144,000 young guys in the world that haven't had sex? And you got to confine it to one race, Jews. They've never had relations with a woman. They're virgins. These are going to be the converts of Moses and Elijah when God puts them back on this earth. God's going to have fun. See, all the cosmos does it. This is a big thing, obviously. You can't. It's hard to even imagine. Moses and Elijah back on scene, back on duty. Two men separated in time, reunited in phase three in the underworld, and then taken to heaven, and they're coming back. And they're coming back in natural bodies. They're not coming back in glorified bodies. We used to say resuscitate, but that's an inaccurate term. Resuscitate means someone's almost right. They're a drowning victim. They're almost dead, and you resuscitate them. Right. So I'm sorry I used that term. It was another excuse someone could use for leaving the church. Revelation 14:4. These are the ones who have not been defiled with women. They've not had sex outside marriage, for they have kept themselves chaste. So the implication is that marriage isn't defiling yourself with a woman, obviously. So it would seem that they walk a celibate course. Their phase two is short. I mean, they're saved as a result of the preaching of Moses and Elijah. They're to Moses and Elijah what the 12 disciples were to Christ. Because when Moses and Elijah, at the middle of the 3.5 years into this, where they are completely protected from all there's going to be a world of people that want them dead. Governments want them dead. They can't touch them. Not until it's time. The Antichrist especially wants them dead. It's an embarrassment. They're right out in the open. Go get them. Well, it's right over there. They're right over there in the desert. Just send out some commandos. Go get them. I'm not going. Last group was fried. I don't care how brave you are. If you saw group after group go out there and be turned into toast, you probably wouldn't want to join. You'd probably think, nah, I'll sign me to do something else. Because and they are protected. And there's kind of a warfare going on between them and the Antichrist. Now, this is just my opinion. I got it from a member of my church that I respect highly. They don't say stupid stuff. Anyway, well, they might, but I don't know about it. was an observation. We know another thing. God brings these four people back from the past and puts them on this earth. From the relatively distant, if not way distant past. Two are unbelievers. Two are believers. They're people that come back from their past and are re-put on this earth. So all guesswork about the Antichrist, forget it. He's Alexander the Great brought back. I gave you the documentation in the scripture. I don't know why people never saw this. I'm not any genius. I just one day said, you know, this is troubling me. I got these verses and I don't know what this means. I said, okay, put aside everything you ever thought about this and just look at this. It was real helpful. So I deduced it's Alexander the Great. Now the false prophet I am not as dogmatic about, but I think I know who it is. I think. This is because there's, you know, I have it as Nostradamus. I gotta pick a prophet that was prominent and that people knew, that people are followers of, even to this day. There's followers of Nostradamus to this day. You can go online and see him. I've been told about it. I don't go look at that. They follow his prophecies and his stuff. And he was anti-Catholic. The Catholics didn't like him when he was alive. He was Jewish too. That's cool. He's got that credential. Because the false prophet will be a Jew. The Antichrist will be a Gentile. And the Jews will embrace this Gentile as their Messiah. And they make a treaty with him. A covenant of death, it's called. Bad. Of all the alignments Israel's made with nations. This is not good. But they do it right at the end. They do their last god-awful thing. You know, this is what Jews did in history. This one. Yeah. they were responsible for the death of Jesus, but God works that for good. Anyway, so you got that, and you got Moses and Elijah, and they're in the Middle East, and they're in that, they will minister in that same environment that John the Baptist did. John, when he grew up, retired into the desert where God prepared him. And he gave up marriage. He gave up liquor. We just saw that. Not because liquor is bad, but because he was under the Nazarite vow, making these extra sacrifices. Now, a Nazarite could get married, but in John's case, marriage would be stupid. You don't have to drag a woman out there in the desert. You got one mission. Your whole life is committed to being the one who announces the appearance of the Messiah. What a privilege. And you baptize those people that are converts. You question everybody that comes to you. And those that are qualified, you baptize them in the Jordan River. And then you go back to your desert. And you have for lunch locusts and wild honey. And you wear this garb. And you come out there and you're no nonsense. You're compassionate on people. People have to be compassionate, but it's no nonsense. These two men are going to preach and evangelize. Their first line is the Jewish nation. And they're going to bring judgments down on the nations. They're going to be hated. Environmental judgments. Elijah was a miracle worker. All the prophets weren't. Very few were, actually. Elijah was a miracle worker. Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, they weren't miracle workers. Miracles occurred around them, things happened, but they weren't miracle workers. Moses was a big miracle worker. Plagues of Egypt. Water to blood. That is a flat-out miracle. This isn't, you know, algae going bad. All the naturalists, all the stupid heads. No, this is the Nile River, only within the borders of Egypt. You go any place else on the Nile, excluding Goshen, turned blood red. Fish died all over the place. Plague one, getting Pharaoh's attention. You just walked into something, buddy, you do not understand. You're this big, high Pharaoh with all the accoutrements and all the stuff, leading armies, doing all this stuff. You just stepped into something from the least expected source. Those slaves up there, one of their own. And that's the way it is with the cosmos out here. They're about to step in something they do not understand. Because they didn't avail themselves of the truth. God will give them a chance in the trip. Okay, they do this for 3.5 years. And they get these converts, the 144,000. Nice round number, isn't it? 12 times 12. You know, you get the 144,000. And they are dead on. And they're young men, too. And they're Jewish. And they're young men. These are the ones who have not been defiled with women, who have kept themselves chaste. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. You know what Christ is called? Will be called by people on the earth? You know, and it'll be sponsored by believers, because it's funny, in a way. Here's this person in heaven. You never think of a lamb as anything dangerous. Never. Maybe a ram. Maybe, you know, they will attack you like they did out on the ranch. If you turned your back on one of them, bam! And it hurt. They just couldn't resist. Anyway, lambs, we don't think of any lambs. So the articulators of the plan of God in the midst of the great tribulation, they're going to call Him the Lamb. The Lamb's coming to get you. If you don't get with the Lamb. So it will be a popular name, just as the Antichrist will be called, and the people on the side of the Antichrist, they will love this. They will call Him the Beast. It'll be an actual name. You usually don't think of those names as very flattering. Well, certainly not Beast, but He will be unabashed. He is the Beast. Comes up from the abyss. Anyway, so they follow the Lamb wherever He goes. Now, after the Antichrist, see, when I was back to this warfare thing between the Antichrist and the two witnesses. Well, the Antichrist comes on earth and he gets killed. And he's assassinated. No, you look all around, who would do that? Who'd have the nerve to do that? Maybe in this thing between him and the false prophet, that he is zapped by one of Elijah's fire deals out of heaven. But then God pops him right back on his feet, and people just go berserk, he's it. You can't kill him. And that's when they start screaming, who can make war with the beast? This builds into this crescendo. This cult of this personality that's you can kill him, but he'll be back. He's a false Christ, the ultimate false Christ. So when he martyrs and God allows him to have a win, if you will, a very brief one, then the two witnesses are finally allowed by God to be taken into captive and beheaded. And on television, on the streets of Jerusalem for 3 days, and then they come back on their feet. Say, repeat with the Antichrist thing. They come back on their feet, and a voice comes out of heaven, says, come on up here. And they rise up slowly in front of all these people that were just partying and giving gifts because these two menaces were dead. It's like God is playing cat and mouse with these fools. That's the whole thing. You know, if you're not going to line up on the right side, God's going to play cat and mouse with you. And then, bam! So, the second half of the tribulation, these men are sent out to evangelize the nations. Doesn't look like travel conditions would be real good then. They don't need help. They are transported around. They have a bubble around them, as it were, invisible. No one can touch them, like their counterparts, Moses and Elijah. But they don't get killed at the end. They get resurrected off the face of the earth, close to the second advent. And all 144,000 of them follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These go to China. These go here. These go there. Jesus sent out his disciples how? By twos. It's a big world to cover. Okay? And 144,000 people are going to cover this. But if they don't have to make travel plans, they're just brought into an area, they evangelize, and they move. They go right into the heart of the Antichrist kingdom and evangelize. And get the gospel. And tell people what they need to do because the Lamb's about to come back. And he will manifest himself as a lion, and you don't want to be on the wrong side of this. So all the nations will be absolutely without excuse. This is high drama. You cannot imagine what this is going to be like. I can't. I try to. It's exciting. We're a part of it. A really big part. You have a front row seat. These have been purchased from among men as first fruits to God and to the Lamb. And no lie was found in their mouth. They didn't distort one single doctrine for anybody, anytime. They didn't lie on a personal level, but on content level. Nothing but lies come out of the false prophet and the Antichrist. And no lie was found in their mouth. They're blameless. Okay, so blameless. What do you have to do to be blameless? Well, you got to work at it. You got to get informed. And so forth, and so on. This is a condition for believers. They're obviously in phase two, converted in the first half of the trib, minister in the second half of the trib. That's a quick learning curve. For believers in phase two of Christ in Hebrews 9:14, Jude 1:24, of believers under phase three sanctification, Ephesians 5:27. In the midst of a crooked and perverse generation refers to society at large. 21, crooked, twisted, of people morally and spiritually. It's used in the Bible of roads that are all... When a VIP of a hiker came to an area, they would try to straighten the roads out for him. They didn't want him going all the way and clear all the rocks out and everything. And that's what John the Baptist was doing spiritually, providing a people for the Lord that were straight and knew things, and were right. That's what prophets did. So, scolios, we have a person with a twisted body, scoliosis, all deformed. So scolios, kind of roads, carries the connotation of dishonest or unfair. 1 Peter 2:18. New Testament references include the following verses: perverse, perfect participle, diastrepho, distort, pervert, depraved. Jesus used the term to describe his generation. My generation. What was Jesus had to say about my generation? That they were crooked and perverse. The people of God, so the chosen race, they were crooked and perverse. Because they had got way off beam with regard to doctrine. They had an overt morality, they had overt religiosity and devotion, but they did not believe that salvation was through the coming Messiah who would suffer and die. So they were all messed up in a different way. It's like a different disease, but it's just a different effect. Generation refers to contemporaries living in a particular era. We name our generations, don't we? The one before mine was, I think they call it the silent generation. They're quiet, silent. They didn't say anything. No. Then we're the baby boomers. And on down. Then X generation. Now we have the millennials who are just stupid as hell. Generally speaking, no offense. You expect it to get worse, not better. Well, that's what I've heard. And looking at some of them, I kind of concur. Of course, that's not an objective way of analyzing a generation. But they're going to get to step into the trib, along with the rest of us that are unbelievers. Living in the midst, along with, among whom, views believers living before the unbelieving, negative, corrupt civilization that they happen to be in. And to get yourself where you realize that you don't fit in. You don't fit in. Those that want to fit in are lovers of the world, friends of the cosmos. You can't be a friend of the cosmos and be a friend of God. And again, none of my words should be mistaken to mean we ought to treat people bad, rude and stuff because they're not saved or they're not this. No, not at all. But we recognize that group of people is off limits for me. I'm going to marry one of them. I'm going to have them as my social circle. Now, you may have an event where you're at work and they have a party and all. That's fine. But you don't carry it on. Your friend's a positive volition, however few they may be. And this includes family, which is a big deal, because family's held up as God by people, and family's very important, but family doesn't come first. If you're a married person, the order of events is your wife comes first, your kids come second, everyone else is out here. Not any other way around. See? You have to get these are basic things people don't seem to figure out in life. You appear. Phino means to shine or give off light. It's what negative volition is supposed to be observing. Not that they can understand it, but they just see that this person, you went to that church, you're different. You're different. You're not the same. Doctrine's changed me. It's what it does for people. They let it. The noun lights is phoster. It just means a luminary of any kind, of that which gives off brilliance. Revelation 21:11, of precious stones that shine and give off a brilliance. But lights implies a surrounding darkness. Matthew 5:14, a surrounding darkness. Not of a physical nature, but of a spiritual nature. All around us is darkness. All up and down our neighborhood, darkness. You are the light of the world. Christ is portrayed, John was portrayed as a bright and shining light. I mean a bright one. When he came blasting on the scene, when he opened his public ministry. When God tapped him on the shoulder. Time to go. Jesus is the light of the world. He says, you are the light of the world. In other words, the world without you has no light. Spiritual light. And that's the kind. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. You see it from a distance. Driving down the road at night, you see the city sitting on a hill. All these lights are on. This is what we are to be out there among these people. That means we have to discipline ourselves and think in these terms. And I don't mean any holier-than-thou attitude or any of that kind of mess. That's a turn-off. People see through that. It's not acting. It's just being a believer, positive, with the right approach to things. Nor does anyone light a lamp. For a believer who is not a witness, positive witness, it's like someone, they lit lamps back then. They had no electricity. They lit lamps. They had oil lights. They lit them at night to lighten up their areas. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket. You would think that person was insane. Well, light a light, go up and put it under a basket. Okay, that's what the believer is that's not shining the divine viewpoint. Those of you who do it at work, you get occasionally get an opportunity to explain it. Most of the time, these people are not interested. Doesn't matter. You're a light. But on the lampstand, you put it up on a place where it can diffuse maximum light. You don't put it over in the corner. I'm not talking about ambient light for, you know, moods. I'm talking about I want to see things. But on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works. They will observe you and the things you do and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So, again, something to think about and pray about, that when you launch out there, that you have a positive witness. That you operate like a light. The cosmos, on the other hand, made up of human activity, is always viewed in a negative way in the Bible. I mean, when I say always viewed, I mean in terms of the spiritual side of things. God's works, His creative works, they are spoken of in a positive way. But the cosmos is always viewed in terms of a darkened realm. And these verses illustrate that. But we're going to take our break and get where we need to be so we can observe the Lord's table, one of the commandments we have and privileges.